In March of this year, my guest on This Is Your Racing Life was Adam Sangster, son of the global racing tycoon Robert Sangster. Adam has had a lifetime in racing and now runs one of Australia's finest thoroughbred farms in Swettenham Stud at Nagambie in Victoria. Before we join Adam, may I wish you a very happy and safe Christmas from our team and especially our sponsor Tobin Brothers, and a big thanks to Pete McGinley for putting the programs together right throughout the year. Good morning, everybody. My guest this morning is Adam Sangster. The name Sangster has been synonymous with racing, not only here in Australia, but globally, for well over four decades. Adam Sangster's father, Robert Sangster, died too young at 67 years of age, but his legacy and what he achieved as a visionary, as an owner and a breeder, is legendary. Adam is part of the legacy now here in Australia through Swettenham Stud. And it's great to have a chance to catch up and chew the fat with Adam Sangster. Good morning to you.
Morning, Brian, and morning to your listeners. I'm sorry about my throat. I've got to say I'd certainly fail the scope if I was a yearling.
What's happened to you?
Oh, it's just young children at school. Just picked up a little, just a little throaty.
Oh, okay. But you're feeling okay?
Oh, I feel fantastic, especially after the great sale we've all just had as Victorians.
Yeah, well, that's the first question I want to put to you is how was the sale, the premier sale that's just happened at Oaklands Junction, our number one sale here in Victoria and one of the great sales of Australian thoroughbred racing. For your property, Swettenham, you had a big draft of horses going through the sale ring, the first of the American canes were being produced by your property. What was the end result?
Well, I've got to say the whole of that Inglis's sale, I mean, even through to the P2 was remarkable success. I mean, it really was. The right stock from all the Victorians which are bought to the sale sold particularly well, and you know, it was at 88% clearance. The market was up 15% for Premier 1 and up a staggering 44% in Premier 2, which just shows that really the market strength is particularly good at the moment. And it's our domestic buying bench is it's got to take my hat off to all the syndicators and everybody out there who's pushing the stock. I mean, Racing Victoria came in with thoroughbred breeders just before the sale started on the Friday. We had a good get together with Thoroughbred Breeders Australia as well, and really just hearing from Greg Carpenter and from Bernard Saundry the positioning of where Racing Victoria is just gives us enormous confidence in the market, and that showed through in the prices. And Inglis has did a great job bringing a lot of overseas buyers in, and having said that, the South African buy and the Singapore spend was actually down a little bit, but probably purely because of the rand, domestically it was very strong, Brian.
I was going to say the value of the dollar, which isn't strong at the moment, that would have a big bearing on how these sales work.
Absolutely, it really does. I mean, you get the Hong Kong Jockey Club come down. This is the second year they've been here, so they recognise the quality of yearlings which come here to Melbourne and the Victorian sale. And you know, it's now an international sale. I mean, you can get the prices. I mean, Swettenham, we did make a conscious decision not to take any horses anywhere else to any of the other sales and just sell here in Melbourne, and we were rewarded because we sold a lovely filly who broke the record and Pat Carey, for a client of his, newly lady in the business, wanted a great race, a race filly, and one with a foundation broodmare, and it was out of our old family, the Sangster family, sort of hidden energy, and she herself was a race by the family, and actually came second in Dad's race in Adelaide, the Robert Sangster, when she was trained by David Hay. So it was a great feeling.
Hidden energy that was, and of course the stallion is Fastnet Rock, $675,000, sold to a local man and a very good trainer in Pat Carey, and ironically the underbidder was Tom Magnier.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've got to say the Magnus do they go around, they look at all their stock, they're a very professional outfit, I've got to say, and that's why they're as good as they are.
Yeah. Let's talk about your dad. As I mentioned in the introduction, he died too young in 2004 at 67 years of age. He was the only son to his parents, and of course his father created the Vernon Pools, which turned into a gigantic operation and a very wealthy operation, and your dad inherited everything, that type of business.
That's right. It was great grandfather who set it up, and it was a you know, in the First World War, it was it's really sort of how just any person could actually, through the soccer pools, through football really, but soccer, and it was really how anybody on could make significant money. And it was our rivals. We were set up in Liverpool, and our rivals were in Littlewoods, which were in Manchester. And ironically, in the end, Littlewoods actually ended up buying Vernon's. So it's sort of this was round about 94 and 94 time. But great grandfather was you know, it's, we were very lucky.
You look at what your dad achieved as a businessman, thoroughbred racehorse owner and breeder, but 27 European classics have gone to the Sangster family, including in excess of 100 Group 1 races, 2 Epsom derbies, 4 Irish derbies, 2 French derbies, 3 Arc de Triomphes. Wow. The Breeders' Cup Mile, the Melbourne Cup, of course, with Belldale Ball, and British Flat Racing champion owner on 5 occasions. And his first horse, I think, was a horse called Brethren. Is that right?
Oh, you know more than I do.
Yeah, I think it was about 1971. The first galloper was Brethren. But in the mid-70s, he partnered up with John Magnier, father of Tom Magnier from Coolmore Stud, Vincent O'Brien, the legendary trainer. And what a force they became. And that was in the early 70s. At the same time, happening on the other side of the world were the Mark Toombs, Sheikh Mohammed and Sheikh Hamdan, and the Mark Toom family coming together and getting this global involvement, particularly through European racing. And the two would come together at the sales in the mid-80s, and it was just extraordinary. It was out of control.
Yeah, it was at that time, but I've got to say, in the mid 70s, when Father and Vincent and John got together, they did lift the Kentucky sales. They went back because a lot of the bloodlines out of Europe had been sold to them to North America, so they decided to go over there and really chase that Northern Dance and Nijinsky blood, and that was really their prime aim. So they lifted the sales average from 50,000 to 500,000 in the space of sort of 10 years. And at the latter time, that 500,000 is when the Maktoums and Sheikh Mohammed came into the market. And yes, it was very heady days. I've got to say that those times. You know, there were some. I mean, Sheikh Mohammed himself. He bought his foundation mares off my father, as did Prince Khalid Abdullah. He bought them off father. So father did start. He was. I mean, they were. It was happy sort of friendship, but very much in competition.
But what about those duels they did have? You know, trying to buy horses and it'd get down to two players, the Mark Toombs and the conglomerate of your dad and Magnier and Vincent O'Brien. But they'd be getting up around 10 and 12 and 13 million. This is over 30 years ago.
Well, that's right.
US dollars.
Yeah, it was extraordinary. I was there in 1985 Seattle Dancer went through, and funny enough, it wasn't actually Sheikh Mohammed who was the underbidder; it was Wayne Lucas. Yeah. And so the market in America, not just with the Middle Eastern sort of influence, but the market in America was incredibly strong. I mean, it did come to a very immediate halt in the 90s. And a lot of these farms, great farms in North America, had overextended themselves, and the banks called in an enormous amount of debt, and the market did sort of come to a very immediate halt then.
Yeah, it had to, didn't it?
Well, it just did get to us,
realistic.
To it really did. But because they just thought the Kentuckians did think that it was never going to end.
And did your father and his team actually draw a line in the sand and actually go and see the Mark Toombs and say, this is madness, you know, we're taking on each other, we've created a market that's unrealistic?
Yeah, I think that's when we became friends. There was a sort of friends. It was with Sheikh Mohammed. There was a summit in Dubai, and father always remembers landing there and going to Sheikh Mohammed's palace and all the lights being on green all the way through and getting there. And they just it was Yeah, they were good friends, but they just decided that it probably was not sort of a... I mean, they wouldn't look at each other's lists, but they'd certainly of horses to yearlings to buy. But if they knew they were bidding on them, they probably would just gently not bid on that one.
That's interesting. And Sheikh Mohammed had a great respect for your dad.
They did. They both had...
And vice versa?
It was. I mean, it was... You know, they both enjoyed the equine flesh, but also they sort of had a big giggle about the two-legged ones as well.
We'll come to that a little later, perhaps. Your dad, he of course is the father of your two elder brothers in Guy and Ben, and you're number three, and then there's a sister Kate. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. We're all still incredibly close. In fact, I spoke to Ben, middle brother Ben, this morning, and whose son Ollie, my nephew, has just been working with us at the sales here in Melbourne, and he's actually doing some riding out for David Hayes. In fact, he was champion amateur rider in 2013. So, you know, as David Hayes says, he's an asset. So we're all of us are very much involved. My eldest brother Guy is—he used to run the estate in England, Manton, which was a lovely 2,500 Cotswold sort of training establishment, which actually we sold last year, and he's now gone back into the City of London. But
now the asking price for Manton, I just looking at the articles, was £26 million to buy Robert Sangster's property, which was, of course, you guys inherited. And that was back in 2014. Did you sell it? Is that when you sold it?
Yeah, we did. We sold it, and it was to a local gentleman, but it was all sort of the agricultural land had. I mean, when Father passed away in 2004, British land was around that area, it was around about £4,000 an acre, and it basically went up to around about sort of £13,000-£14,000 an acre within 10 years, and it was amazing, purely because of rollover tax. I mean, it's a situation which with the European Union and arable land, that you know, the advantage of having land was very significant, and new tax laws came in. The lovely thing is that Manton, the actual main house, which is the old stable, which, funny enough, you wouldn't believe it, but Carbine's sire was actually trained at Manton.
Is that Musket?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely, trained at Manton there. And my brother Ben has actually taken on that 150 acres, including the main house, and we'll call it Manton House Stud, which is lovely.
So the racing theme continues?
Well, the stud farm continues. The racing theme, very much Brian Meehan and George Baker, are now tenants of a new owner.
Oh, okay. So ownership has changed, but it still stays as it was, basically, doesn't it? After 200 years.
Yeah, well, it does, absolutely.
That's great.
And we hope that the new owner of that land will keep it that way.
So with your dad, the association with Colin Hayes was a brilliant one too. They were great soulmates, but so much success over a good few decades.
I mean, Colin and Dad were seriously good friends. I mean, it was just lovely to see them together. They used to joke with each other, and you know, Father would always pull with Betty around just to see Betty sort of look at sort of her husband, and sort of it was all in jest, but it was they had a great fun and great respect for each other, and they had enormous success on the racetrack, as you know, and just with Arthur Dabnick, and with Peter, and with Jan and Kerry, and obviously with David, and great respect for the whole family. And he loved coming down here to Australia. I mean, he did spend, you know, he spent a significant time down here, and he had some great friends.
And what about you, Adam? You, if I look back, you started in finance. You sort of, did you want to, because Dad left home when you guys were fairly young. He was married to your mum, Christine, and he followed his dream, and your mum had to sort of keep fending, you know, for herself with the four kids. How tough was that?
Do you know, going to boarding school, you're away 9 months of a year, so and having two older brothers was an enormous help. I mean, we moved from the north of England down to southern England, lived around Ascot, and went to schools around that area. It was, but there were quite a few other families in the same situation as ours, so it was sort of a it was tough, but we got to see father a little bit. But our mother was my mother was incredible, and she really was a great lady. Funny enough, she never stepped on a race course or went after the divorce. She loved her horses, but that was it. I mean, it was a great shame, but she herself was she was very good. I went, in my gap year, went down to Cambridge Stud and did a season down there in 1984.
In New Zealand, yeah.
In New Zealand, and you know, then came back and went to South Africa and did a season with Terence Millard, the sort of a Hayes equivalent of South Africa, and wanted to come back into racing, and was actually going to go up to time form and work with the great Phil Bull up in Halifax. And little did I know when I was going up for the interview that my mother had phoned up Phil Bull and said, listen, the young lad's coming up, 19 years old, don't give him the job because I want him to go into finance. And 4 years later, having worked in Threadneedle Street, just near the Bank of England, the same company invited me up to Hong Kong, and that's when my mother told me that she'd phoned up Phil and told me not to give me the job, purely because she just thought that racing, it's like anything. You need to expand your mind and sort of expand all your sort of facets of sort of finance. And she said, "Listen, there's nothing worse if you're trying to chat up a girl is talking about horses, booze, and sex." Because she said, "Trust me, the booze and sex stories run out after one dinner." So, I've got to say that experience in City of London and Hong Kong was immense.
Yeah, I can imagine her bitterness with a breakup of a marriage and being left with the four children. I'm sure financially things would be okay, but you know, young kids still need a dad, don't they, to be around?
Yeah, we did. My mother actually, she did remarry again. And yeah, actually a couple of times. So, but she, you know, it was always very, very raw.
Yeah, sure. We're taking a break. It's an interesting life. It's the racing life of Adam Sangster, and we're going for a break. This is Your Racing Life, presented, of course, by our good friends Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. We're back with Adam Sangster. We're celebrating a racing life. Adam is the principal and the owner of Swettenham Stud up there at Ngambie, about 90 k's out of Melbourne, up towards the north. A beautiful property that traces back to Collingrove Stud before Swettenham. Collingrove was set up by the late great trainer Colin Hayes and Adam's father, Robert Sangster. And prior to that, it was owned by the H.C. Slee family, and they ran sheep and cattle there?
That's right, they did. It was very much a rural property, and I've got to say it was the reason why father and Colin purchased for property because of the great introduction by racing. Well, at the time it was the VOBIS, Victoria Owners and Breeders Incentive Scheme, and we had the New South Wales property, which was Collingrove up there where Rory's Jester stood.
That's at Sandy Hollow.
Yeah. We decided that really that it was good to relocate him, best to relocate him. So this property was beautiful. It's got 3 miles of river frontage, and they were selling it in three different parts of it. So we bought the three of them and sold off the non-horse but more commercial property, and then bought some more land next door to Mitchelton Winery, which is more sort of a market garden land. So it's for breeding purposes, it's absolutely ideal.
So your landhold is what, 900 acres?
It is 900 acres, and you know, we stand 6 stallions there. We have stood 8 stallions in the past, but 6 is the right amount.
So you're on the Northwood Road, and for those people that know the Mitchelton Winery, which has been there a long time, it's a fabulous place, again on the river. You're nearly opposite the front gate, aren't you?
Oh yeah, we say Mitchelton is our canteen, and I've got to say that it's a very good canteen, especially with the new owner, Mr. Jerry Ryan, having purchased it, and it's he's certainly lifted the whole area of the Ngambie region, but especially in Mitchelton Winery. In fact, there is about to be a 56-room hotel about to be set up there as well,
which is going to be
incredible. But the wine itself is fabulous, and it's going to be a destination.
That's great to hear. That's wonderful for Victoria. But just touching on Jerry Ryan, what a wonderful investor he has been into our state. Not only with racing, with his caravans and everything that he does in business, he's such a great Victorian, Gerry Ryan, and he got that ultimate reward with the Merrickane and his partners winning the Melbourne Cup in 2010. And how ironic would it be that a Merrickane would stand at the property opposite Mitchell in which he owns? So it all seems to just all come together.
Yeah, it is.
Is that how it works?
It is wonderful, and it just and he deserves everything he gets. He and his family are wonderful people, and great supporting in every aspect of business and all charities, and just such a giver. And no, just very lucky to have him as a patron with certainly with Merrickane and Prix Saint-Saloon. And as you saw last week, Merrickanes were selling particularly well, and you know, from a lot of trainers out there were just saying, this stallion, you know, he's got every chance. We like the style of horses, and they've got got leg and stretch, and you know, he's got good bone. And so if you see the buying bench of the 28 yearlings which went through, it's pretty significant. He averaged in the first session, he averaged 65,000, and in the second session he averaged just over 50,000. So it's very exciting to stand a horse like Merrickane.
And it's good too for racing here, because there always was a tendency to sort of drift away from a Melbourne Cup winner. If you took a Melbourne Cup winner to start, in my time in racing, it was ho-hum. You know, people wanted to win golden slippers and things like that. But all of a sudden, people are saying, well, hang on, these imports are coming in and taking this race. They used to always come from New Zealand. Now they're coming from Germany, they're coming from Japan, they're coming from Ireland. We've got to stop this. And it's all got to start in the breeding barn. That's the best way to start, isn't it? With a horse with a great pedigree, as you say, a great type of horse. He always reminded me, and I remember watching him and calling him winning the Melbourne Cup, but looking at him come back to scale, he was like the quintessential equestrian horse. He just was a magnificent-looking creature.
Oh, absolutely. And it just, every time he did come across the quarantine centre, he'd always up there in Eastern Creek, and it took until he came down to Victoria to the quarantine station where the quarantine manager phoned up and he said, listen, I've been so jealous of Eastern Creek getting these horses. Now I've seen him in flesh, and wow, what an individual. He is definitely the best individual I've ever seen. And this is from a quarantine gentleman who'd seen a lot of these horses go through. And he's a lovely horse to work with. He's at the moment, he's at Calumet Farm in Kentucky.
Oh, he's shuttling, yeah.
Yeah, he's shuttling there. He's actually got 2-year-olds over there in Florida. There's 16 being trained there, and I spoke to a gentleman the other day, and he said to me, he said, listen, Adam, he said, I'm not telling you they're going to be March 2-year-olds, but at the moment they're training like Tarzan, but as you know, they may run like Jane. So it's good. So it's you know, he's got every chance. He won as a 2-year-old as well. I mean,
did he?
You know, people forget that. And, you know, he was bred by the great Wertheimer family who owned Chanel. Global, huge company. And you know, in his pedigree, he's got 175 sort of black type winners in the first 5 dams.
What are the breeders? What are they telling you? What sort of mares are coming towards Merrickane at your property?
Well, there's a mixture of mares, I've got to say, and it's people sort of, I mean, that the holy grail of winning that Melbourne Cup is just resonates in every Australian. I mean, we as Aushorse and Thoroughbred Breeders Australia, we sort of send out surveys, and it says which race would you ultimately want to win, and 95% is always the Melbourne Cup, or a couple of the Darwin Cup, and maybe one or two of the Golden Slipper, but yeah, primarily it's the Melbourne Cup. And you know, people who've a lot of owner breeders went to him, and a lot of commercial breeders went to him. But it's a sure good sign that trainers like him, and you know, it's he's got every chance now. It's up to him.
Back to your father, Robert. He was bringing horses and sending them out to Colin Hayes back in the later 70s, and we talk about Belldale Bull, but I remember horses like Triumphal March and horses of that ilk. They were high-class animals. More often than not, they'd take sort of, you know, a season or two or a season and a half to settle into the Australian way, the custom and the way we race, and our climate especially. But that moment in 1980 when Belldale Bull won the Cup, and, of course, your dad was married to Susan Sangster, or Susan Renouf at the time, Susan Sangster, Lady Renouf now, and there were great tales about the celebration of Cup Night with the trophy. But I remember Johnny Letts telling me the tale that your father had Triumphal March and Belldale Bull in the race, but John was quite confident, and he wanted to go to the front a fair way from home, that, you know, Belldale Bull could win that Cup, and he was right.
Yeah, what a time in history, and I think it's remarkable actually, Brian, because that cup, the 1980 cup, which was presented by the DRC to my father and now Lady Renouve, was actually, the historian of the DRC has worked out that 99% chance that was actually Farlap's cup.
Yes, it was melted down. It's a great story. Andrew Lemon has told me that story, and it was Farlap and I think another horse, or another trophy.
Widara?
Might have been Widella.
Widella,
yeah. About 1953.
Yeah, was that the Underwoods horse?
Yes, yes.
Well, the Underwoods then donated it back to the DRC, and in 1979, I think it was Rod Johnson said, we've got a spare cup in the vault here. So, but I think the spooky thing is that in that 1980 presentation, but Farlap, celebrating his 50th year of the cup in 1930, was actually floated down the Ballarong River and was actually in the winners' circle when that cup was being presented to my father.
It's sort of the hide.
Yeah, the hide.
Yeah, it was, because it was removed from the museum. They were redoing the museum here in Melbourne, and he was out on display at Flemington in his glass case. So he actually came back 50 years later, and part of his trophy, we believe, was melted down at part of that that 1980 Melbourne Cup, because it's a bit larger than the others, but there's a great story behind that.
Oh, it's incredible. So, yeah. You know, Father, he did enjoy, sending horses down here to race, and that triumphal march and Belledale Ball. I've got a lovely painting of a start there, painted by Roy Miller in the office at Swetnam, and it's just it's really depicted all the
at the barrier. It's
at
brilliant.
The barriers, yeah,
brilliant.
It really is, and it's sort of that day. And Johnny Letts, he's 49.5 kilos, and he set for sale, and they couldn't stop him, and it was a great day. I've got to say, I was only 14. I was in school in England, so it's a certainly I sort of understand what it is all about now.
And your dad was a trailblazer, because he was bringing those horses here and giving them a chance. You know, Belledale Ball wasn't a high quality performer. He was, I think, he's a stakes winner, and had he come via America on his way to Australia?
Well, there's an interesting story about that, Brian, because there was a gentleman from Kentucky who just was absolutely adamant that he was going to purchase this horse after he won the Melbourne Cup. And my father kept on saying, listen, just be very careful, because it is a handicap. It's not the cup race you're used to in America. But the next day, after all the celebrations at Florentino's, the dancing on the table by Susan and belting out Waltzing Matilda, this particular American was sitting in the foyer of the Hilton Hotel for when Father came downstairs, and Dad went, oh, well, if you're that keen, here's a checkbook. You write in what you think the figure is. And I think the figure was $500,000. And I've got to say, when they imported the horse back to America, or exported the horse back to America, when he ran, I mean, I remember Father saying, well, the horses had already crossed the line before Belledale Ball had come around the turn. So it was great for him to win down here in Australia, but he didn't go on.
No. Your dad also was instrumental in bringing some of the great jockeys to ride for him, and, as I say, for Tom Magnier or John Magnier and Vincent O'Brien. There was a whiz kid out of the US at the time called Steve Cawthon, and he was arguably the best jockey in the world. He was only 19 years of age, or high teens, wasn't he, when he came to the UK and retired very young.
Oh, Steve was a great man, great Kentuckian, and he was just he had lovely hands and riding horse. But yes, I mean, there was Steve out of America. There was Cash Ashmussen, yes, as well. Obviously, the Babe, Brent Thompson.
Brent Thompson went across to ride for Dad, yeah.
Yeah, he was a great fellow. Willie Shoemaker came across, and we just got beaten a short head on when Shirley Heights beat Hawaiian Sound in the English Derby. Pat Edry was a very, very, very keen rider. John Reed, a lot of them sort of donned those great green and blue grew silks with the
spotted cap.
Exactly. Yeah. So
and Adam, your dad and that conglomerate of owners and trainer in Vincent O'Brien, a wonderful association with the best ever in Lester Pickett.
Yes, of course. I mean, Lester O'Shorey. He was the maestro, and he won the Derby for us in 1977 on the Minstrel, and he just was. You know, Father always had enormous respect for Lester, and I've got to say, when when in 1984, when he wasn't riding for the team, he did have a great moment, probably for Leicester in his sense of humour, when we got beaten a short head in the English Derby with El Gran Senor was beaten by Secreto. And I think Pat Edgerie just went a little bit early on El Gran Senor, and as they're walking back to the unsaddling enclosure of a weighing room, Leicester walked past Favre and just went, "Did you miss me?" But Leicester was, he was a fantastic jockey.
Now, that horse El Gran Senor, there was a deal on the table to sell the horse if he won the Derby for about £20 million or something, but he had to win the Derby, so it was signed, sealed. And the only bit missing was El Gran Senor to win the Derby, trained by Vincent O'Brien. And along comes Secreto, trained by David O'Brien, Vincent's son, and noses El Gran Senor out, and the deal doesn't happen. What a disappointment there.
I think the greatest disappointment in all that was poor David O'Brien, because he was mortified that he'd beaten the team. And David O'Brien was Vincent's son, and very soon after that he gave up training altogether and actually went down to Provence and was a very well established viticulture. He made some fantastic rosé, but I think after he won the Derby, I think Sir Peter O'Sullivan interviewed him and said, "Listen, everybody must be so proud of you." And he said, looked round his shoulder, and a helicopter was taking off the heath at Epsom there, and he said, "Listen, no, it breaks my heart for what I've done."
Because he beat his dad.
Yeah, but and knowing where the deal was and with where El Gran Senor, was sitting with going to America, and just obviously David had grown up all through those years of those great years of the 70s and 80s, and he had a huge respect. And this Secreto with Christy Roach on board came down the outside and just nodded him.
Yeah. Finished off going off to make wine.
Yes, yeah, he did. And I think he's now in Perth, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah, in Perth. He was he was mortified.
Oh, dear. This is Your Racing Life. Adam Sangster joining us for Tovan Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. We'll come back after this break. Talking with Adam Sangster this morning on This Is Your Racing Life. It's been a wonderful racing life so far. He's only a young man, and it's all ahead of him with this beautiful property at Swettenham Stud. We'll talk about those stadiums there in a moment. Just going back to the great Lester Piggott. Lester Piggott was actually jailed. He'd won been awarded an OBE or an MBE by the Queen, and he was the greatest jockey that European racing and possibly the world has ever seen. But he went to jail for tax evasion. Did your dad have any tales about that one?
Oh, it was a very sad time for Lester, that. I mean, it really was. And it was, I do remember Dad saying that when the Inland Revenue came for him and they had to write out a rather large cheque, that when he did finally write that cheque, they actually found out that he was writing a cheque out in an account they hadn't found before. So, it may have extended his time at Her Majesty's, I don't know, but that seemed to be...
You spoke before about the Vobis scheme and Colin Hayes, the great Colin Hayes, and your father coming together to create this property, which is Colin Grove, which has now, of course, become Swettenham and continues the dynasty of the famous Swettenham name. Swettenham Stud has bred or raced 194 Group 1 winners around the world. In Australia, it's extraordinary, from the Melbourne Cup to the Blue Diamond to the Golden Slipper to the Newmarket to the Lightning Stakes, the Caulfield Guineas, the Thousand Guineas, the Australasian Oaks. The Derby, of course, on three occasions, the Swettenham colours, Robert Sangster colours, have been carried. But also right across the board to the USA with the Breeders' Cup on two occasions, the Capistrano Handicap, the Hollywood Derby, to Ireland and multiple winners. The Irish 2000 on six occasions through the UK, the Dewhurst Stakes, the Eclipse Stakes, the English Derby twice, the July Cup three times, Kingstown Stakes three times. It goes on and on and on. But it's interesting how your dad and Colin Hayes said, "No, Victoria is the place we want to be." But they were great visionaries. They could see what this Vobis scheme was becoming. And how important is it for our breeders? How important is this scheme for your business?
Gee, Brian, that honour list is quite incredible, isn't it?
It's extraordinary.
I mean, it really is. When you go through it and just rattle those off, and to think that, on a number of occasions, he was second and third in those races, not beaten by much. But
Sydney Cup on two occasions, and going back to the Sydney Cup in the early 80s, might have been about 83, 84, he was part of the Nebo Lodge conglomeration with Bob Lapointe, and their trainer, their private trainer, was Brian Mayfield Smith, who stopped the run after 33 years of TJ Smith and won the trainer's premiership. They won everything, didn't they? And the colours were so prominent.
Oh, I mean, Brian was incredible. I was just up the other day with Brian when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame up in Brisbane, and he just lives down the road with his wife Maria at Mansfield, and we talk all the time, and he's a great pal, and but he certainly enjoys Victoria. But going back to the Vobis, yes, it's the Super Vobis, and now we're coming to Vobis sires. So if the Stallion Farms now put in for this new incentive, which is very much backed by Racing Victoria, and in 2019 we'll be racing for purely, if you go to a Victorian Stallion, you'll be racing for $1 million from 2019 and subsequent years afterwards on that Breeders' Day, which happens at Caulfield around about the 18th, 19th of April. And there'll be a three-year-old race as well in 2020 for $1 million as well. So it is, Victoria is a great place to breed. I mean, this year we bucked the trend from any other state that broodmares are coming across the border now from New South Wales. They recognise how important it is to get the Vobis qualifications, and we breed. We've got great climate here, great horse farms, fantastic nurseries, and we've got veterinary operations. I mean, you've just had the Scone, that's probably the largest veterinary operation in the Southern Hemisphere. They've just set up in Avenel, just down the road from us.
Well,
and neighbors, certainly
recognise
it. So it is. It's that northeast corridor is very significant now, Brian.
I grew up holidaying with my auntie and uncle in Nagambi. From the moment I opened my eyes, we'd go to Nagambi for school holidays. So I know Nagambi well. Beautiful part of Victoria. And I marvel at how it's evolved to where it is now, because growing up through the 60s and 70s, the Best Stallions, the Biscays and the Bletchingleys and this beautiful Star Kingdom line, they'd all leave the state. They'd trot out, go over the river, and they'd go to the Hunter Valley. We couldn't retain that wonderful blood here in Victoria. But there's been just a great renaissance of turning it all around, and you're a part of this driving force. For people listening who aren't pure racing people on this sporting station, 1116 SEN, the Vobis scheme, just tell us how it works. Vobis stands for Victorian Owners Breeders Incentive Scheme. That's how we get the letters Vobis. So how does it work?
That's right. I mean, I've got to say it's a very much a Victorian state government sort of incentive, and it's the unused or unclaimed dividends from the TAB, which is then funneled back into the breeding industry. So the government certainly sees the importance of the racing and breeding industry for the communities around the whole state, and I think that's around about $13 million, which does get put back into the industry. And it's if your broodmare goes to a Victorian based stallion, that you really, if you race in for a Vobis race, you get an extra $20,000 in the city, and certainly you get an extra sort of $8,000 in the country, and it's a massive incentive scheme. And there is, as I say, it's a big pot and of funds, and now it's the breeders put. They nominate their horses, so they add to it. So it's sort of a mixture, sort of match for match dollar with breeders and the government. But we have a very good thoroughbred breeders, Victoria, James O'Brien, who's our president, and Patrick Clancy, who is the ex-premier's right-hand man, ex-premier being Dr. Dennis Knapfine, who is a remarkable man for the industry, but has helped enormously. And obviously the current incumbent, Mr. Pecula, is particularly interested in the thoroughbred business. But it's a great incentive, and you can tell by the prices, and all the trainers basically do highlight these Vobis horses if they're not just sold in the state, but if they're sold in Adelaide or up at the Gold Coast or certainly in Sydney, that they highlight those ones, and their premium is at least about 20% more than they have for the non-Vobis horses.
Adam, that's a good description, and the horses that are standing at your property, these are the stallions that actually make up the roster, of course, at Swettenham Stud at Nagambi, and we've got so much international blood. We spoke about Americain being, of course, the one of the flagship stallions there, but Equiano, who was an absolute speed machine. I saw him win 1 year at Royal Ascot. He won the King's Stand. He won that on two occasions, but I was there one particular year when he did win, and he was as good a sprinter that I've seen anywhere in the world, Equiano. So is it filtering down through his sons and daughters?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his best is yet to come. He's been well supported in a breeding barn, and we sold a lovely colt for him last week. For fun enough, for Phil Sly, I got 160,000 for him, and out of a Fastnet mare. But he's yeah. They used to call them both them up in well, they do call him both them up in England because he was the Aussie basher, having beat all those good Australian horses coming to Royal Ascot,
and a very fast horse we didn't see a lot of. Master of Design, a son of Redoute. Choice from Urge to Merge, who was the last Tycoon mare from Princess Tracy. And Master of Design was a TJ Smith winner, which is the top sprinting race up there in the Autumn Carnival, the Easter Carnival in Sydney. And he ran like a hundredth of a second slower only than the Great Black Caviar in 2012. So, you know, that's serious sprinting. That is high level sort of action, isn't it?
It really is, and he's an absolute, I mean, James Bester, who's a great judge, calls him a marvel of design. I mean, he was a $2.1 million yearling, so I think that sort of just goes to justification how good-looking he actually is. So there's a he's only got 2-year-olds at the moment, and he's got a very good horse called Kinetic Design, who ran second in the Malibran Plate, a filly of Robert McClure's, and is going for Versailles Produce, but we've got every hope for him.
And the son of Chamadal is Poussance de Lune, that grey horse who's very popular here for a couple of seasons, a horse owned by Jerry Ryan. And he, you know, injury sort of forced him off the racetrack. But I remember back in 2012, through that period, he started off, he won the Bendigo Cup, he won the Queen Elizabeth on the final day at Flemington. Back in the autumn, he won the Blamey, he won the Peter Lawrence Stakes, just beaten the Maccabi Diva to Fortella, beaten in a photo finish. Very capable, high-class horse. Now, where's he at? Is this his first season at stud?
First season and last season, and he was very popular. He let down to be a beautiful, really good sort of looking stallion, and he is the only son of Chamadal to stand in Australia, and they don't make any Chamadals anymore, and he's just a very impressive type. And Darren Weir, who exceptional trainer, just said he never got to this horse because he was plagued by injuries. I mean, to think that this horse, when the stalls were being loaded for the Cox Plate a couple of years ago, this fellow was favourite for that, and that's when he did his tendon.
We never saw the best of him, did we? Now, what about the international contingent here, Tornado, and also the Wow Signal?
Yes.
That's a good deal to pull off.
Well, just very lucky. The Qatarians, who are Alsha Cab Racing, who's arguably the best, the most prominent and powerful powerhouse at the moment in global racing, have entrusted me with their great son of High Chaparral, in Tornado. I mean, he himself, I mean, he covered a good book of 174 mares. I mean, he was well priced, and it just was a right stallion to bring down here because he's got fantastic muscle definition. He himself was a 2-year-old who won 3 times as a 2-year-old in Group 2 at the end of a season, which sort of bucks the trend for High Chaparrals, and sadly High Chaparral passed away last year. So this son is a very, very significant son for Victoria to get, and I've got to say I do thank the Qatarians in entrusting me with this horse.
Lightly raced, only 12 starts, 6 wins, winning at Group 1, at 3, and also at 4. And these horses that have only 4 or 5 starts, well, you know, so they're well preserved, and he is the fastest son of High Chaparral.
He was
the great stallion.
Oh, great stallion, got to say. He just, he himself is, when he won at Royal Ascot, he just picked them up. It was first race of a carnival, and I've got to say that then Sheikh Johan, he had the win of that one, and then the Wow Signal, son of Star Spangled Banner, backed it up, and he won the Coventry. So it was a great day for the Alsha Cab Racing.
Racing in Australia, but particularly here in Victoria, is a massive employer, and I just look at your employment role up here, and I see Mick Bolton there, a good friend of ours who works with you. But you know, from office staff to handlers to people who come on for the breeding season, they're huge operations, aren't they? So when you prepare for the thoroughbred breeding season, the stallions come here for the spring. How long does it take? Is it 4 or 5 months?
So
the stallion will arrive. The mares are sort of all there waiting. Is that how they sort of walk on, walk off type of? Is that how the action happens?
Absolutely. The stallions get they get released around about the 18th of August, having been in quarantine for a couple of weeks, and really what we prepare ourselves by maiden mares and mares who didn't get in foal the year before, they go under lights. So really what it does, it triggers a sort of endorphin in them, in themselves, to sort of think that it's spring. So they come into season a lot earlier. So on the 1st of September, it's very busy from there. These stallions sort of, that serve 3-4 times a day, and we have an extremely good reproductive vet in Dr. John Hurley, who's been with us for 23 years. And I've got to say, veterinary science has been a very intricate part of the breeding business, because it's got so much better now with various sort of drugs which these horses are allowed to take for fertility, and it gets their percentage right, so these horses aren't overtaxed too much. And I've got to say that gestation period is just over 11 months for these mares. We fold down just over 150-160 mares a year at Swetnam. We have two night watchmen on permanently, and 90% of the mares fold at night because it's purely predatory. But it's a very sort of a very, very complex business, and very high management to slot these mares in so that they're just going to ovulate at the right time, so they get covered, and we hopefully that cover would conceive and then go on for a pregnancy. And it's just very important commercially to get these mares in foal early. So when you come to sell commercially, you want to have an August, September foal presented as yearling, because that's when the physical differences between an August September foal to a November December foal is immense.
Tell me about the stallion. He's the boy with the easy job. How many times can he do it through the day?
He can do it four times through a day, and he's very much looked after. I mean, we have two stallion guys. We actually have stallion girls who we're one of only very few farms who allow the girls to basically handle the stallions, which I think is an important trait, because we at Swetnam they're very conscious of our staff. We're just that question you asked beforehand. I think just the other day we went up to Canberra. We had with the thoroughbred breeders. We had a meeting with the minister. There are 30 ministers there, and I think Anthony Thompson, who has Widden Stud, he put it into perspective that they've got 360 broodmares at Widden, of which 65 staff look after those. Now, we're in the agricultural business, and just for example, for the cattle, he gave the example, with 1,000 head of cattle, you only need one member of staff to look after that. Ooh. So it's a very labour-intensive business. These horses are looked after so well. They are in the whole aspect of health and the horse husbandry, we've got we exceed any other sort of care and attention, and the vets are brilliant at what they do, and they're on call all the time. And you know, a lot of people prefer to be with horses than they do with humans.
There's no doubt about that. It's been a good life, a good racing life. It's an exciting time too. It must be for you as a thoroughbred breeder to see, first of all, the match, the hatch when the foal arrives, and then to see them come through as weanlings, foal to weanling to yearling to be sold, and to realise a decent sort of price for the owner of the brood mare and or you as the owner of the foal that which reaches the sales ring. Exciting times ahead, I'm sure, for Swetnam. And I congratulate you, too, for what you've done for the industry and your massive investment into Victorian racing. And as you say, it's labour-intensified, so you're employing a lot of people, a lot of boys and girls, to make this whole wheel turn.
Yeah, that's right. It is. I mean, I am Australian. I employ Australians. I invest in Australia. A totally Australian-owned outfit, and the money stays here in the country. So it is a lifestyle. I've got to say, it's very, the competitiveness of it is immense because you're dealing and you're competing against other countries and people who have a very large checkbook. So the decisions I make have to be a very, very well thought out planned decision, because a wrong decision could ruin my whole farm and the employment of who I do employ. But it's it is very satisfying, Brian, when you do this, when you do the matings and you see the foals on the ground. The breeding is a great way to do it. I mean, we invest as well in fillies for the future. You don't see the green and blue colours racing around too much anymore, but what I do is I do go out and buy fillies, which I lease out to trainers, and they come back into my broodmare band because I find that's a good way to do it for myself and my family. I've got three children and a lovely wife, and I just need to make the right decisions. I don't gamble, and the gamble I do take is in the broodmares and the stallions which I buy.
Well, I'm glad you didn't listen too carefully to your mum and you didn't go down the finance track and you went down the racing track, because we're a lot better off for it.
Oh, Brian, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you very much to you and your listeners.
Good on you. Thank you. Adam Sangster, my special guest this morning on This Is Your Racing Life.